The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day.
Hello and welcome to Cult Touch, the podcast all about cult movies. What makes a cult film? And are all cult films worthy of the title? I'm Alex Secker, and joining me as always is, he's mad and macabre, Warren Bedensky.
It's a good picture. You pay now. Give me your money.
I suspect he won't be joining us for dinner, poor Woolhouse.
You're goddamn right.
Well, today we're discussing Tobe Hooper's 1974 horror classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Banned upon its release, and in many countries and several theatres, the film earned a mixed reception from critics, with some praising its style and others complaining about the brutality. It was an incredibly profitable movie, earning over $30 million at the US box office on a budget of just $300,000, and it kickstarted the career of its director. It's often been called the most influential horror film of its time. So why does it have such a tremendous cult following? Before we discuss our thoughts on the movie, we'd like to discuss a little bit about how it was made. So guys, what do we know about Tobe Hooper's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
A lot. So much.
A lot.
I was obsessed with learning about this film when I was younger. Mostly because I also met Gunnar Hansen as well. Name dropping there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you've told me this story before, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, I used to work in an autograph shop for the listeners that don't know, and we had signings, and Gunnar Hansen was one of our guests, and we had a screening of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in our lovely hometown of Swindon, which he did some Q&A for as well, and I hung out with him a bit. One of the things...
Interesting side note there is, yeah, Swindon's actually the influence for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's not really.
It's just a shitty.
Apparently, Tobe Hooper got the idea of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or his first idea for it, when standing in line at a crowded store, wanting to get through the queue, saw the chainsaws over the other aisle. I was like, you know, I could just chainsaw everyone.
Yes, he did. He did, yeah. I've got that note.
He also went for a PG rating.
Yes. This is something I wanted to talk about, right? Because this is the most fucking absurd thing I've ever heard. And I remember when I found that out, however long ago that was, spent days trying to understand why he would possibly think that it would get a PG rating. His basic logic was that he just didn't show any gore.
Yeah,
but like, if you watch the film, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, this movie's fucking horrifying, right? It doesn't matter that you don't show any gore. It's, why would you think that you were ever going to get a fucking PG rating? Like,
I think one of the best bits of the story has to be that Tobe Hooper actually worked really close with the MPAA, or whatever the ratings board was at the time,
yeah,
to try and work it out. Because from what I understand, they didn't have an R rating back then. So,
Right, okay. It
was basically either PG or an X rating, which X was usually for porn. And he didn't want to be associated with porn. And he would literally like phone up and be like, how can I do this and this? One I remember him telling the story of was the meat hook, when you hang on the meat hook. Yeah. And he's like, so how do I, calls up the ratings board, like, how do I hang a girl on a meat hook and, you know, get a PG rating? Like, you can't. Like, come on, there must be a way. Like, no, seriously, you can't. Come on, there's got to be a way. And then apparently the guy on the phone was like, I don't know, Jesus. Don't show the meat hook ever, like, entering her. Just, like, keep it completely implied.
But it's like, it's so... That's such a ridiculous idea, that he would ever get... Like, at what point was he standing on set, surrounded by fucking bones and blood, and a guy wearing human skin on his face, someone else's human skin at that, thinking, yeah, this... this isn't that different to Pinocchio. This would definitely get a PG rating. It's like, fuck off. What are you talking about?
Nice.
That's so absurd. That's more absurd than this movie, I think. That, you know, piece of trivia.
Even better, though, is the entire plan backfired as well. Especially for... I think especially for the UK. Because basically, he had nothing he could cut because everything was implied already.
Yeah.
He couldn't cut anything because then nothing would make sense. So in America, he was just like, well, I guess it's an X rating then, or an R when it finally got released or whatever. And in the UK, it just got banned.
Yeah, he got banned in lots of countries.
Because he couldn't cut anything out. There was nothing to cut out.
It wasn't until quite recently, actually, that it was unbanned in this country.
Yeah, 2003, I want to say.
Something like that, I think. It might even be 2006.
Yeah, so you could buy it on home release, but they've never lifted the cinema ban.
It's distribution ban in general, I think, or public distribution. So, like you said, you could buy it on VHS or DVD, but you couldn't watch it on TV or go to cinema and see it. The first channel to show it was, and this says a lot, it was Channel 4? Yeah. I thought it was Film 4, and then Channel 4 showed it later, but I'm not sure about that. But yeah, it's just, I don't know why or how he ever thought he was ever going to get a PG rating. Like, fucking Mrs. Doubtfire's 12.
To be fair to him, Mrs. Doubtfire hadn't come out.
Well, no, but you know what I mean. Like, why did he fucking think that he was ever going to get a PG rating? And not only that, but why did he even want one? Like, I don't really understand the logic of, like, you're a horror movie, man, and you are a horror movie. It's not like it's... Although there's no gore and it's all implied, it wears its horror movie status on its leather face, if you want. It is an out-and-out horror movie. Why does he want to be a PG? I remember reading once something about him liking Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaws being a PG.
Mm.
But Jaws doesn't feature sadistic fucking cannibals. It's just not like... I don't understand at all.
Well, maybe in his mind it was just like, well, this is just a movie about a family who invites some travellers to dinner. You know, like, these kids trespass on their property and they buy rights to fend themselves.
It's just and then the they realize American dream.
It's just a misunderstanding. So they invite the girl to dinner as an apology and she makes it worse.
Yeah, she just gets all fucking worked up. This is her fault, really. Yeah. They're not doing anything. Trying to feed her, trying to invite her into their home and be nice.
I mean, there was aggression on both sides.
Oh. There was. There's blame on both sides. It's true. They went into the house. They kicked the hitchhiker out of their van. Those bastards.
They didn't pay for services rendered.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that they're cannibals. There's blame on both sides, man. Mm. I mean, one of them's wearing fucking hot pants and the other one's wearing flares. Like, blame on both sides, definitely. So, you know, talking about how Toby Hooper's a fucking nutcase and thought that it was going to get a PG rating. I don't really understand why. And especially when he was stood on set. Like, maybe in the scripting process, I can sort of see that he might have been like, yeah, you know, we'll show it this way. We won't show this. We'll just imply it. And like, but once he was on set looking at it, I just, you know, I don't see how he could possibly have thought that he was ever gonna get a PG rating. Like, they used real animal blood on the walls, right? Like, And
they used real animal skulls and carcasses and stuff from the roadside to scatter around the house, didn't they?
Yeah, and real human skeletons as well.
Yeah, there's apparently an actual human skeleton.
It costs less than a fake one if you buy it from India, apparently. But yeah, like that's you know, it's real. They didn't have money for extra costumes, and they didn't wash the costumes for fear that it might ruin continuity. And the set wasn't air conditioned.
No, it was the hottest summer in record as well.
Yeah, there's like no ventilation at all, and they had real animal blood on the walls. The production designer also collected like dead cattle and animals and stuff in like the various stages of decomposition, and like littered it on the floor and stuff. That place must have fucking stank. Mm-hmm. like really fucking stank. And Marilyn Burns, is that her name?
Yeah.
The actress that
Sally.
Yeah. She said that her costume, by the end of it, her costume was so drenched in stage blood that it was like stiff. It's like solid when she's trying to put it on and stuff. Yeah. And they work long hours too, like 16, 17 hour days, 7 days a week, solely because they wanted to cut down on rental hire costs.
Yeah.
Warren, carry on.
I was going to say, I think the dinner table scene was like a 24 hour straight shoot or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was, and Marilyn Burns was like terrified by the end of it, like actual terrified, because these like crazy men looming over her while she's tied to a chair for 24 hours straight, like fucking mad. But yeah, just like a really grueling shoot. I don't think enough is made of, you know, and obviously I know that this movie, like, so it's quite hard to talk about this movie without actually talking about even behind the scenes stuff and things, without actually talking about my opinion on it. Now, my opinion on this movie is I have a sort of a complicated relationship with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. When I was a kid, one of my all-time favorite movies was Poltergeist.
Oh yeah,
right, fucking love that movie. I still fucking love that movie. The first one. And at that point in time, when I was a kid and you didn't have access to the internet or anything like that, or behind the scenes stories or anything, I was under the impression that Poltergeist was definitely directed by a man called Toby Hooper. Obviously there's speculation as to whether or not that's actually true. How much of it was actually directed by Toby Hooper and how much of it was actually directed by Steven Spielberg. But I always thought that it was just at that point in time that there was no speculation and it was just Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
And that was it. And Spielberg basically just sort of lent his name to it or whatever.
Mm.
I didn't really have any understanding of the ins and outs of filmmaking at that point in time. Pardon me. So I really wanted to find more Toby Hooper movies. And I can remember going to the video shop and Video Solent, it was called. And you remember Video Solent, I think it's a Bookies now, which says a lot about modern Britain.
Chip shop's still there, though.
The chip shop's still there, except it's no longer called Trawlerman. It's called Brits with a Z.
Wow.
Fucking chip.
But yeah. Anyway. I went to Video Solent and was looking at the horror section to try and find movies that were Toby Hooper. And I was looking at movies that had front covers that looked like Poltergeist, basically. That was like my logic, was that it would look like Poltergeist if it was the same guy.
Makes sense.
And I found Life Force.
Oh, yeah.
And watched Life Force and quite enjoyed that. Didn't like it as much as Poltergeist, but, you know, quite enjoyed it. And I still quite like it now.
Mm.
It's definitely a lot cheesier than Poltergeist. But, you know, it's not a bad movie. And then I found Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And wasn't like my dad and my mum both just wouldn't let me watch it. Just straight out wouldn't let me watch it at all. But I don't know how, somehow I managed to get it, like the video rental version. Whether or not I managed to dupe someone into renting it for me, or I just went on and on and on until my parents eventually relented or not. I don't know. But I might have duped my nan into it. I duped my nan into buying Pulp Fiction for me when I was like 8. So that might have been who. But I remember going upstairs and watching it and being fucking terrified. I didn't get that it was... I didn't get the satire element of it at all at that age. Now, you know, that's probably because it's not a fucking PG and it shouldn't be a fucking PG. And I was way too young to watch it. But, like, it really scared me. And what scared me about it most was the fact, and it's something that Rob Zombie says, actually, as well, when I was looking up the research on this for this episode, is that it looks real. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, it doesn't look like a movie. Movies tend to look like movies. They tend to sort of have that movie feel, like fairly decent production design or whatever. Whereas this looks fucking gritty and grimy and...
But like a snuff film.
Yeah, and it looks a bit... Yeah, it looks like it's almost like a documentary. I mean, Toby Hooper actually was a documentary filmmaker, and he was an assistant director at the University of Texas at Austin, and I think that certainly lends itself to it. That he had that sort of realism eye for detail, if you like. So the fact that there wasn't any blood and gore and stuff doesn't matter, because it just fucking terrified me. It was just like, this is horrific. That's the only way I can describe it. And I'm not someone that... I love horror movies. I'm a big horror movie fan. I'm not someone that gets scared, really. But yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre fucking terrified me. To the point where I only ever watched it that once until I was in my 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Just never watched it again. Because it was scary. It was just like, that is a scary movie. Never watched it, never watched its sequels. And then in my 20s, you know, older, wiser, if you like, and far more knowledgeable in the world of film and cinema, or whatever, reading about it, and I think Empire did a thing on it, and I was reading about it, and they started talking about the satire element and all of that, and I was like, yeah, do you know what, people always go on about how great it is and stuff. I've always just been fucking terrified by it. Maybe I should give it another go. So I bought it on DVD and watched it, and probably got about halfway through and was like, nope. Nope. I'm turning this off again now, because it just brought back all of that, like, fear and stuff, right? Of when I was a kid, just like, nope, definitely not. But decided that what I would do is try out the sequels.
Oh, yeah.
So I tried out the sequels and actually quite enjoyed them. Sort of removing, because they do look like movies and they do have a more comedic feel to them, shall we say. I don't know if that's the right term, but I think that's the right term. But yeah, so I quite enjoyed the sequels. So this is probably another couple of years later, decide to give it another go, and managed to watch it through the whole way, and was actually kind of disappointed.
Oh yeah.
Because once I'd sort of gotten over that, like, nostalgic fear that I had of watching it when I was a kid, I just didn't really see a movie that I thought was that impressive. And it was a bit sort of like, you know, what's the fucking plot? And what's the point in this movie? And, like, I realised that, like, slasher movies and stuff tend to be like that. And this was, like, one of the first and stuff. But I just sort of felt like, well, I don't get it, I guess. Now that I sort of know that it's not really meant to be scary, it's sort of meant to be macabre, I don't really find it that entertaining.
Oh yeah.
And sort of like what I'd always liked about it, despite never having actually watched it, was the fact that I was terrified of it. And suddenly you remove that fear and it didn't have the same impact anymore. It just became this sort of like rubbishy movie. And don't get me wrong, it's really impressive what they did and they made it and stuff and blah, blah, blah. However, so I didn't watch it again then. I probably haven't watched the movie for, what, I'm 28 now, so I probably haven't watched the movie in 8 years, let's say. Maybe less than that, seven. Watch it again whenever I did, a couple of days ago now, for this podcast. And I think I got it. Watching it this time around, I was like, do you know what, right? This isn't the best movie, but actually, I think I sort of get it this time round. Like, I sort of get what it's going for. I get what it's trying to be. It is kind of funny in a really sadistic and weird way. It is still kind of scary because what is the point? There is no point. Like, and that's scary in and of itself. And they're not monsters. They're just fucking nutcases. Like, and, you know, I sort of, like, got it. So, it's a movie that I went from being absolutely terrified by to sort of quite disliking to sort of going, like, do you know what, actually, I sort of get it. But, I don't know. Yeah, so, but it's hard to talk about without sort of explaining that, because my opinion on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre has changed dramatically over the course of my life.
Wow.
But yeah, there we go. That is my opinion on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I there was a point I was trying to make, but I can't remember what it was now.
I shall cover up this mistake with some trivia.
It went by the working title of Leatherface and also by Head Cheese.
Head Cheese.
This sounds funny, like the best awful title ever.
Funny aside, when I read that piece of trivia, I thought the working title was Leatherface and Head Cheese.
Imagine that film.
It's like a buddy comedy.
Leatherface and Head Cheese. Leatherface and Head Cheese.
I was thinking more for a sequel or something. It's like Leatherface. Leatherface 2. Head Cheese.
I know, I was sort of imagining like The Odd Couple. But we're like, Leatherface is like the tidy one because he's got the apron and he's trying to make dinner and things like that. And Head Cheese just comes in and fucking grates his head all over the place or something. I don't know. That's what I had in mind anyway. the working title isn't Leatherface and Head Cheese. It's Leatherface and also Head Cheese.
Interestingly, they brought Leatherface back for the title of the third movie.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. You've seen the sequels, presumably, Warren.
Yeah, although mentioning the sequels before we talk about them, did you guys know automatically when you heard of this film that it had sequels?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. But then, like I said, I heard about it when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it as a kid, and like growing up and things, you know, only ever hearing of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then one day, I'm in like the DVD store, and there's a DVD with Dennis Hopper's face staring at me with Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Like, they did a second one? This must be new. And I found out that, no, that's years old. There's a third and a fourth. Like, what?
I certainly wasn't aware that it was a franchise.
Yeah.
Like, I was under the impression, probably right up until sort of 15, 16 years old,
yeah,
that it was the single movie.
It'd be about the same for me, I think.
Yeah. I don't know why. It just, because people don't mention them.
No.
And you know what? They fucking should, because especially Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, way better movie than people think it is, I think.
I remember not enjoying it too much, but I was half watching it at the time, so a lot of the because much campier and more comedic, so half of it was just going over my head because I wasn't paying attention. And yeah. Turn around, just like, what the hell is going on?
What's great about that movie is that halfway through, Dennis Hopper shows up.
Yeah. And then at some point, he starts like cutting down the cave.
Yeah.
Bring this motherfucker down.
That's basically the. That's basically what's missing from the first one.
Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, if they'd had the first one be exactly the same, except when he's fucking swinging his chainsaw around in the middle of the road, Dennis Hopper just showed up. It'd be fucking brilliant. I wouldn't have been scared at all. Yes. The one that throws his fucking wrench. He just runs off.
They get out of the truck. Yeah. They leave. Why did you get out of the truck?
Do you know what? I always think this, right? I always think this, they get out of the truck and they run down the side and then continue running down the road. Wouldn't you run around the truck? At the very least, like, there's a fucking truck. Just fucking, yeah.
She's like, nope, gonna get my cardio in.
She's really lucky that a truck and then another truck.
Stop.
A pickup truck show up at the same time, because that road's fucking dead. That's kind of part of the point of the film. And then these two vehicles show up within seconds of each other, just as she's coming out onto the road. Watching it again this time, that ending, it is quite a scary movie. It does have that sort of, like, because it does feel real, even though it's sort of like there are absurd bits as well. Like, there's that bit where Leatherface is like sat by the window and he's like, I mean, he's not talking obviously because Leatherface doesn't talk, but it's like he's going, what have I done? Oh no, I've messed up. Like, it's like really fucking, like, just takes time out to sort of show you that Leatherface is a bit messed up. It's like, I know that. The first time I saw him, he fucking hammered a guy's head in. It's quite a strange movie. It is definitely a strange movie. That is something that struck me as well watching it. It's like it's despite the fact that you know what's happening, what's going to happen, because it's so iconic, it's quite hard to second guess. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I've seen it before, obviously not in a while, but I know what scenes are coming, but I'm sort of not entirely sure when they're coming or how it even gets to that point. Like, watching it, I knew that at some point she winds up sat at the table. But it's just like, I don't, how does it get to this point? When does that happen? I'm just waiting for it to happen. I mean, like, nothing happens. I mean, what, you know, right at the start, they get to the house and it's not the house. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, and then obviously they then later wind up at the house, but just sort of like it's a movie that has all of these iconic moments, but I can never sort of remember putting them in the right order or how it gets from point A to point B. And the answer is, it doesn't really. It just sort of chucks a bunch of stuff at you and people run from one to the other. It's not based on a true story.
No, that was going to be the one I wanted to bring up. It's not even close.
No. Like, that's total fucking nonsense. Apparently, the reason why Toby Hooper put it at the front, this sounds really pretentious to me, but this from his own words, he wanted to respond to the lies told by the government on things like Watergate and Vietnam. Whereas I think at this point, Toby Hooper had made a movie. He'd written a horror movie that he thought was going to be a PG. Then he'd shot it, featuring, you know, characters covered in blood. Yeah, you don't actually see any gore, but a guy running around chasing a woman with a chainsaw, a woman being hung up on a meat hook, a guy's head being carved off with a chainsaw, a guy having his head hammered in, crazy fucking cannibal killer meal party thing. And he thought it was going to be a PG. He then decided, upon watching it in the edit, that it would still likely be a PG. And figured, do you know what? At this point, why don't I just tell everyone it's also true? It will definitely get a PG rating. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, so it's not true, and I think Toby Hooper's full of shit when he says it's about Watergate in Vietnam.
Yeah, I only ever heard that they thought it'd just make the movie sell better.
Maybe, yeah.
Which is probably, the actual reason. Like,
that's probably, yeah. I mean, people talk a lot about the undercurrent, the political undercurrent of this movie or whatever. Mm. And it's got a lot of, what's the word, when people sort of look in to movie, analysis.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of analysis on this movie. In fact, Wikipedia has a fucking massive bit about it that I just didn't read. Because they're sort of like, I mean, I don't know, my opinion on that kind of thing is, like, with film analysis and whatever, is sort of like, isn't it up to me?
Mm.
Right? And I don't mean that, like, excuse me, film analysis people, isn't it up to me what it's about?
I am the appointed opinionator.
What I mean is, like, as the person watching it, isn't it up to me what I take away from it, right? So sort of like, you know, okay, it's interesting to read other people's opinions and stuff sometimes, but
yeah,
when people really pick apart a movie and sort of, like, I sort of get a bit, some movies do, some movies don't, and I don't, Texas Chainsaw Massacre doesn't really strike me as one that does, other than maybe sort of a comment on, you could argue that it might be a comment on, like, capitalism or trickle-down economics or something, because obviously they've lost their job. The family have, like, lost their job at the slaughterhouse or whatever, and Texas is like a fucking dystopian landscape thing. That's what it looks like in the movie anyway. But I don't really think, I think a lot of that's got to do with the fact that they didn't have any money and they needed a reason to have cannibal killers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's got an awful lot to do with anything. It might be a response to movies of the time and things. I think often movies like this are. But yeah, I don't, it doesn't strike me as being a movie that really is trying to satirize anything or anything like that. I don't know, yeah. Maybe I'm talking out my ass. Maybe you two took something different from it.
I know, I get that as well, because I think a lot of film analysis people tend to see a lot of things that aren't there in films that aren't even trying.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
I mean, I sort of think this movie's just trying to be a horror movie.
Yeah. But that's what I've always got, is he just wanted to scare some people.
I mean, the fact that he wanted it to be a PG puts something of a dampener on that theory. But yeah, I reckon that might not even be true. I reckon he might just tell people that because it's like a funny story.
Or maybe he knew he wasn't going to get it, like, way earlier, like first edit. He's like, oh, I'm so fucked.
Maybe. Is it? John Larroquette, the guy who does the opening narration, yeah, when the text is growing up and stuff, didn't get paid for the movie. He got given some weed.
A joint, to be precise.
A joint, yeah. He never got paid for it. There's quite a long and interesting story about the money involved in this movie.
This is what I was reading about, and I didn't look too much into it because I figured you'd guys tell me all about it.
Right, okay, so I'll try and explain it as best I can without waffling on like I literally just did twice. So basically, Toby Hooper and someone else, Kim something, can't remember the name, Hentel or something like that, Heckle, I don't know. But anyway, Toby Hooper and this other person co-wrote the script together. And then once they'd written the script, they formed a company together called Vortex Incorporated. And a friend of Toby Hooper's, named Bill Parsley, gave them... Right, now when I read this, I felt a surge of anger in myself. And as budding filmmakers yourselves, I feel like you might feel the same surge of anger. But I'm going to read it out again, and then I'm going to feel that anger. You ready? Right, a friend of Toby Hooper's, named Bill Parsley, gave them $60,000 towards the production. In return, he owned 50% of the profits. Now, I wish I had a fucking friend that would give me $60,000 towards my production. I'll give you 100% of the profits. If you give me $60,000, I will give you 100% of the profits of my movie. Anyone. I don't fucking care. Okay? That's crazy. And back then as well, like, fuck off, Toby Hooper. You fucking prick. It was never going to be a PG. How did you even fucking sell it? How did you even sell this movie to a mate? Anyway, so they got $60,000, and somehow the cast and crew were all unpaid. I'll tell you now, if you give me $60,000, this is like doubling up as a pitch, just so you guys know. Listener, if you give me $60,000 to make my movie, the cast and crew won't be unpaid. I'll tell you that, okay? So apparently the cast and crew were unpaid. And the idea was that they'd be unpaid until after the movie was made, and then they'd sell it to a distributor. But they were offered profit shares. Now, they've already given away 50% of the profit to this guy, Bill Parsley, the super best friend with $60,000.
Oh, do you know about these profit shares? There's some Gunnar Hansen used to tell about them. So they could give up their paycheck for these profit shares, but they weren't actual percentages. And they weren't told that. They were told, and they were points. So you bought points to a percent of a percentage.
It was like a mortgage, basically, yeah.
But I just wanted to throw that in there because it was a little bit that I knew.
And on top of that little complex bullshit that they were doing, it was also actually only a percentage of 50%.
Yeah.
Because they'd already given away 50% of the profit as well. But the cast and crew were unaware of all of that. So then, when they finished the movie, they went over budget. Somehow they went over $60,000. Just want to say again, if you were to give me $60,000, I wouldn't go over budget. Wouldn't happen. Anyway, they went over budget in the edit. They bailed out by a production company called Pie in the Sky Productions. Why? I don't know. It's not explained. And I did fucking look, because I was reading about this and I was like, you cheeky fuckers. Your mate just gave you $60,000. Then you somehow went over budget. And then just, happy, generous production company. Just like, oh, we'll bail you out. Okay, fucking hell. But yeah, no explanation. they just bailed them out. There you go. Paid the remaining costs. And they paid up the remaining costs for the editing in exchange for 19% of the profits. Which is 19% of the 50% of the overall profits, but obviously comes out of the 50% that Toby Hooper and whoever else already has left. Now, they managed to get it seen thanks to this guy called Warren Scarron. And he is in no way related to the alien bad guys from Farscape. Farscape joke. Thanks to the one person that got that, who is here on this podcast.
It's me.
This guy Warren Scarron, who was the head of the Texas Film Board at the time, he referred it to Bryanston, which was a distribution company at the time, and they agreed to distribute it worldwide. Now, their distribution deal was that they would get $225,000 and 35% of the profits. Now, this is 35% of the profits out of the 50% that they already own, of which they've also given 19% away to Pie in the Sky Productions and whatever away in profit share, blah, blah, blah. So once everyone had been paid up, the guy that gave them the $60,000 right at the beginning, the distribution company, the Pie in the Sky Productions company, once everyone had been paid up after the movie was released and stuff, there was only $8,100 left for the cast and crew. Years, like, the story does have a happy ending, which is that years later, New Line bought the rights off of Bryanston, and gave everyone a larger share of the profits. Obviously, at that point, the movie had become a mega successful. But yeah, that's fucking poor management skill. That is just giving away percentages there. I feel like there's a lot of passion in this movie because no one was making any fucking money. It's definitely just wanted to get it done. He wanted to get it done. He wanted to get it out there. He wanted kids of all ages to be able to see it.
At least with parents with them. But you missed the best bit of the story out about how corrupt Bryanston Distribution Company was.
Yeah, so I felt like I was waffling a bit, so I skipped over a little bit. But Warren, if you want to take so, that bit, there's quite a lot.
Distribution company was fronted by the mafia, operated by Louis Perino, Butchie, and he was using the Texas Chainsaw Massacre to launder profits made from Deep Throat somehow. So what essentially seems to happen is he managed to make a lot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre's profits disappear. So everybody got a royalty check for $405. That is what the cast and crew got at the end of that. And apparently
They did eventually file a lawsuit.
Yeah, apparently Toby Hooper tells a story of where he was like, I'll sue you. We've made way more money than that. And the guy was like, you don't have the balls to sue me, kid. And he says it as like, the guy was half right. I flew all the way to the UK, set up shop there, and then sued him. And then, yeah, when New Line took over the company, they awarded everyone the $25,000 or something that they could prove they were entitled to.
Do you know what the outcome of the lawsuit was?
No.
So the outcome of the lawsuit that Toby Hooper did do after flying all the way to the UK... was that he won.
Oh, then they just go bankrupt. So they have to pay him.
They just went bankrupt, so they didn't get paid anyway. Oh, dear.
But again, yeah, Hans says, so... if you want to know the profits of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he says that... He always tells a story, or told a story, that Terminator 2, which was a movie that was $100 million as its budget... To make the same ratio that Texas Chainsaw made, it'd have to make $100 billion.
Yeah, I mean,
same ratio as profit.
The budget is estimated to be 300,000, I think. And it made in U.S. Domestic box office, it made $30 million. So that is
about
like.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, the only movie to overtake it as an independent movie is Halloween. It is like the second most successful independent movie. I think it was like the sixth most successful movie of the year it came out in, and it's definitely like the second.
There's one coming out soon, isn't there, Alex? It's meant to rival them.
Are you talking about Follow the Crows, Paul?
I am talking about Follow the Crows.
I mean the movie that was directed by you, Follow the Crows.
The film that Craig's
in the near future. Follow the Crows.
I'll tell you one thing about Follow the Crows, right, is that it's not to trump my own horn, but it's as good, if not better, than the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We're under no illusions that it will likely be a PG. And we made it without a friend that gave us fucking $60,000. So, fuck you, Toby Hooper. Ball's in your court, mate. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not starting a fight with Toby Hooper. He is apparently ballsy enough to sue the mafia.
I think you have to get in line when it comes to taking on Toby Hooper.
That is true.
I think Edward Neal wants a shot at him first. He was the guy that played the hitchhiker in this movie. And he said, he said this movie was worse, or his time on this film was worse than his time in Vietnam. So he literally had people trying to kill him in Nam about making this movie a worse experience, and thinks he might actually kill Toby Hooper if he ever saw him again.
A lot of the cast and didn't really like him afterwards, because the hammer scene where they're trying to bash the woman's head over a bucket, like,
oh yeah,
that was ridiculous. There were a couple of scenes where they actually cut into each other's fingers.
Yeah, they did in the scene when she feeds, or Leatherface feeds Grandpa.
Mm.
They actually cut open her finger.
Which is the creepiest part of the film, by the way. Just having that... Like, I think I'd fucking pass out as well.
There's the bit when... he's gonna decapitate the guy. I can't remember his name now.
Oh yeah, first guy.
You know the bit I mean. When he's gonna decapitate him. But they basically were like, Kirk. That's the character's name. I can't remember the actor's name, but the actor's name. The actor was told, "Don't move, otherwise you'll be killed." Like, when we're going to use a real chainsaw on, like, the chainsaw's going to be going.
The guy holding it can barely see.
The guy holding it can barely see. He knocked himself out when he was trying to go into his workshop, Gunnar Hansen, because he can barely see wearing the mask. He's holding the chainsaw that is running, that we're going to pretend to decapitate you with.
3 inches.
If you move even a little bit, and it was, 3 inches away from his face. No fucking wonder people don't like Toby Hooper.
Well, have you heard the story about the chainsaw at the end, you know, when Leatherface cuts his leg?
Because
That was supposed to be quite early in the shoot. So Gunnar Hansen didn't think anything of it. He's like, you know, I'm needed for most of the movie. They've obviously got something planned. And then it kept getting pushed back. And he asked them, so how are we going to do this? And they're like, don't worry about Gunnar. I'm not getting any answers. It's getting pushed back. We're doing fucked up things. They may just throw this at my leg. And that's pretty much what they did. They put a metal plate in his trousers with some meat on top. They were just like, yeah, just drop the chainsaw on it, you'll be fine.
Fucking hell.
Somehow popped him into it. And he actually thought he cut his leg off, because as soon as the chain hit the plate, so obviously the friction made it red hot.
Yeah. Of course it fucking did.
So that scream Leatherface lets out is literally Gunnar Hansen just being like, ah!
Fucking hell!
That. Fuck me. Right. So that's just absolutely ridiculous. There's so many things about the behind the scenes of this movie that's, like, just insane. I mean, like...
I've got another funny one with Marilyn Burns. Not quite as crazy as the chainsaw thing, but you know when she jumps out the window?
She jumps out of two windows in that film.
I think it's the second one, the lower one. They had to.
At the end, you mean? Yeah,
they had to get a stunt double to jump out the window because it was like a 4-foot drop. But to get the reverse shot of seeing her landing, they let her do that. And the way they did that is they stuck her on a 10-foot ladder.
What?
And she jumped off that, so it was higher than the initial drop. I think it's because it didn't have glass or something. And when she landed, she twisted her ankle, which is why she's limping. So she said, I don't get the logic.
There's just so much of... Fuck me. Ridley Scott used this movie as a reference point while shooting Alien.
Yeah, how not to shoot a fucking film.
I know, he's probably like, do as I say or we'll have this.
Now
listen, Sigourney, we're going to release a real alien on you.
No, don't worry though, because we've got this metal plate. Fucking hell. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, this movie is like going on to the point, like, whatever my opinion on this movie is, it is fucking definitely a cult movie, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
Like, we'll just do this now. because it's so insane that it even got made.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it is fucking insane because the spirit of it, whatever my personal opinion of it is, the spirit of it, I cannot deny. I've been there. Do you know what I mean? Like, when we were making Fong of the Crows, and it isn't meant to be a plug.
Plug!
But when we were making Fong of the Crows, www.facebook.com/Fong of the Crows movie. but when we were making Fong of the Crows, we did it with this sort of, like, motto, if you like, that whatever happens, we will get the movie made, we will always figure it out, we will always solve the problem, we will always just keep doing it, blah, 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 like... We'll write our way out of situations, think our way out of situations, we'll just get it made. And reading about Texas Chainsaw Massacre and listening to you guys talk about it, it is very much, I get the impression that is very much the spirit in which this movie was made. Like, people don't fucking do these crazy things. And this is what people that aren't into film in the way that we are don't fully understand, I think. Mm. That people do these things because they're that fucking crazy. Like, they are that fucking passionate about it, yeah? Do you know what I mean? Like, you do. Like, Gunnar Hansen let them put a fucking metal plate and some meat in between his leg and a chainsaw. And he didn't do that because he's a fucking idiot. He did it because he's mental. And that's what being into film does to you, basically. It makes you crazy. You do insane things, like, you know, the 16 hour days, the 24 hour straight shoot, sat at that fucking table surrounded by rotting corpses, and they are real rotting corpses of animals and things like that. Like, that's fucking horrific. You don't do that unless you have that passion. And I know I've said it a couple of times now, but whatever I think of this movie, whether I like it or not, I cannot deny the passion of this movie. Like, this is people that absolutely fucking wanted to make this movie, and they probably would have killed people to make this movie. In fact, they almost did several times.
Toby Hooper tried his hardest.
Well, he almost killed the girl. They just kept dropping a hammer several inches away from her head. A hammer.
Yeah? Say?
Yes. Fuck it.
To be fair, Gunnar Hansen also had a difficult time not killing her. And she is apparently one of the slowest runners in the world.
You know, when he was chasing her, he just kept catching up with her.
Yeah, the scene in the woods. So Gunnar Hansen's wearing 3-inch lifts in his boots. So his balance is off center. He's 6'4", going on 6'7", those lifts. Can't see a damn thing. And is still able to run faster than she is. Oh, and he's doing big goose step kind of steps. Because
and he's holding a chainsaw as well.
Yeah, he was running with this weird walk. If you watch, he does very, like, flat-footed steps.
Yeah.
Almost like walking on ice when running, because he was, like, off balance with these lifts. He said, yeah. You know, he was being as careful as possible running with a chainsaw, because he was like, if I fall over, I die. And there's, like, a bunch of moments where he catches up to her and starts just cutting the, like, branches above her. Because he ran out of things to do to not catch her. So if you watch it back, you'll see a couple of times where he just, like, starts cutting the branches.
It says a lot. It says a lot about this movie that at one point while shooting this film, Gunnar Hansen ran out of things to do other than try and kill someone. Meanwhile, Toby Hooper's just sat there like, yeah, definitely going to be a PG.
So he doesn't actually kill her.
There's no actual branches. He's just a gardener. What's everyone getting all fucking worked up over?
Maybe he said that when they're like, there's no PG, and he just went, is it because we killed the door?
I mean, apparently he got the inspiration for it partially while he was in the hardware store, like you said, Warren, but also while he was watching violent news coverage.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, basically he didn't like the fact that on the news coverage it was, like, reported with, like, no sentimentality to it. He and the way he described it was that it's like, man is the real monster. We're just wearing a different face. So he created a character that was a man that wore a different face. Even that idea is so fucked up that I don't understand where the PG came from. I'm not going to let this go. I just don't understand. At all. Someone can explain it to me.
You see, this movie is designed for kids because it's about a man who has the mental capacity of a child. So children come in late.
He did go and research special needs children to try and get mannerisms, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. And then they put him in fucking clumpy shoes and a mask that can't see, so all of that work went out the window. And then said, here, hold this, it's a running chainsaw.
Don't fall over.
It was also partially, obviously, inspired by Ed Gein, which everyone knows. For those of you that don't know, although everyone does, he also inspired Psycho and Silence of the Lambs. But Toby Hooper says that it was more inspired by a guy named Almer Wayne Henley. Now, I'd not actually heard of this guy until a couple of days ago when I was researching. but apparently he was a young man who recruited victims for an older homosexual man. Which, yeah, again, PG. It's just not fucking happening, is it?
Did he think PG standard for pretty gross?
Yes, that's the only way it makes sense. Oh, fucking hell. It is like the most absurd movie ever, and not because of the movie.
And we also have to talk about how misleading the title is.
Yeah.
It's a chainsaw massacre. Only one person gets killed by the chainsaw.
It's also not really a massacre. I don't know what you imagine a massacre to look like, but I don't really imagine it to look like that.
I wonder what the official definition for massacre is. How many bodies do you need?
Do you know what? I'm going to look it up. I'm going to find out what the official definition for massacre is.
Because Leatherface gets 5. Which means Friday the 13th should really be called the Friday the 13th Massacre.
No, he doesn't.
Jason gets way more than that. He might not get five. Yeah, the hitchhiker would be the 5th death.
The film has
a body count of 5. So yeah,
an indiscriminate and brutal slaughter of many people.
What's many?
Yeah, I'm going to look up the definition of many.
It's like one of those things, it's like, oh, is the number 4 a lot? And you're like, well, in terms of dollars, no. It says
many means a large number of people. So I'm going to look up the definition of large. This could go on a while. Call we have a back catalogue.
Like a Woody Allen film.
A considerable or relatively great size. Oh, fuck off. Oh, no, I'm pissed off now.
Stop that rabbit hole, I think.
Until you get to one. How is many? 24.
There we go. Okay, so it's not a massacre. No, I always imagined a massacre to be like, you know, like armies massacre people. Whereas, like, 5 people in a farmhouse by a guy with a face on his face.
When you say it like that, it sounds like the most redundant face mask ever.
It,
To hide the fact that I have a face.
Redundant.
I wear a face.
Redundant. Right. Warren, what's the opposite of redundant?
Redundant?
Yes, the opposite of redundant is definitely dundant. That's the greatest thing ever. No, the opposite of redundant would be needed, I guess, wouldn't it? Yeah. So are you suggesting that he needs the face mask?
No, it's pretty stupid to wear like a face. Almost like he's gone, you know, I'm going to hide the fact that I'm a human being by wearing a human being.
Yes. Yes. Oh, dear. Oh, I like the logic there. The thing is, it feels like that could be what he thought. So it sort of works.
Oh, well, if we go by the remake's logic, like, I won't look weird by wearing someone else's face.
That is actually the remake's logic, isn't it? Can we just talk about the remake for a second? Because,
yeah,
for all I've said about the original, fuck the remake.
Never seen it.
Well, don't.
I like the remake.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I fucking hate that movie. What I remember about it is watching it and being like, ah, so this is like what would happen if a horror movie was a music video. Because it's so fucking stylish and like, and it's also responsible for the slew of bad horror remakes we've had.
You get the good with the bad.
I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with that one, really.
I heard of an interesting tidbit on the remake was Gunnar Hansen was offered a cameo for it, the truck driver at the end, to be precise.
Oh, yeah.
And
that would have been quite nice, actually.
Yeah, he said he turned it down for one simple reason, because whichever intern or producer or, you know, whosoever job it was to call and try and get people to cameo, called out.
Was it Michael Bay's job?
No, because Bay would have just thrown money at it, and then we'd have Gunnar Hansen in there, and the story of him going, "I got paid much more for 10 seconds work."
You would have had a cameo from Gunnar Harrison. You would have had an explosion instead.
Just a walking.
Michael Bay. Can I just say, I didn't just pluck Michael Bay's name out of thin air. Michael Bay produced the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm. His pitch is actually really good.
To be honest, just saying what Paul said about there being an explosion, it would have been a better movie. If Michael Bay had directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I'd quite like to see that movie.
Mm, it'd be interesting to see how he can handle horror.
Texas Explosion Manager, I don't know, fuck knows.
It might actually have a massacre in it, like the army show up and murder Texas.
Just murder.
They murder the state.
The entire state of Texas.
Through a series of explosions.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the camera spins around and around.
And Sheila LaBeouf goes a bit mental.
He plays Leatherface.
I would see that movie.
I would as well. It would be amazing.
Warren, what were you saying just before we
interrupted? Oh, yeah. So, whoever it was that called him up was like, yeah, we're remaking it. You know, it's the anniversary. Like, we want to bring it back to new audiences. You know, blah, 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 blah. She goes, but what we're doing this time is we're making it this more psychological horror, not the gore fest that the original was. And he just hung up without saying a word. This person hasn't watched it.
What he should have done is gone, don't you know it was supposed to be a PG?
Yeah,
What the intern should have done, he's rung up and said, "This time we're making it a PG." Disney are on board. Disney's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's a movie I want to see. Pixar's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my god. I've got this image in my head of like a cartoon Leatherface, and he's sort of like
butchering Woody and Buzz.
Well, in my head he's sort of like part Wreck-It Ralph. And part one of the monsters from Sid's bedroom, I think. That's
the hooker.
The hooker, yeah. Do you know what? I was watching Toy Story, this is a couple of years ago now, but watching Toy Story with Maddie, my daughter.
That's a PG.
And that's a PG movie, yeah. But that was the first time, when I was watching it with her, that I ever got that joke. That it's a hooker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, it's a hooker.
Mad, look, it's a... never mind.
And then I got really pissed off, and I was like, this should have been rated R. Where's Toby Hooper when you need him? He's like fucking John Lasseter, right, directed Toy Story. It's like him saying, yeah, we were pushing for an R. All the signs are there. We got the hooker. We got
scary
eyed aliens.
Scary baby head doll.
Kid's got a skull on his t-shirt. What more do you want?
All of the people. Have you ever noticed in that? All of the friends of... what's his fucking name?
Andy,
yeah, sorry. Andy's mates are all Andy. All of the kids have the same face as Andy.
So I told you they were going for an R.
Yeah.
They're all wearing Andy's face.
It all takes place inside Andy's head.
It's actually a really, really deep psychological movie, Toy Story. And not in the way that it actually is, but in a totally other way, where it's kind of a precursor to Fight Club. This is what happened to the narrator / Tyler Durden that made him become who he was. It's not really. Anyone listening to this podcast, that's not true.
I think they know that, Alex, to be honest.
I'm just picturing that one person who's like, Toy Story? Really? Like, it stopped. Podcast.
I need to reblock this shit.
I need to reevaluate my life. And show my kids the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Family-friendly edition. Anyway.
There was only one bit that made me jump in the film as well. And that was...
Right, yeah. This is what I wanted to get onto, Paul. Because me and Warren are horror fans.
Oh, yeah.
But you are not.
I'm not, no. I don't like horror films.
So why don't you like horror films, Paul?
I don't think they make good films. The horror films that I've been... Or watch this horror film. It's like Saw and that, and it's just gore for gore's sake. And I fucking hate it.
Ow, calm down. No, do you know what, right? I get that. I just think you're watching the wrong movies.
You're probably right. I didn't mind the thriller aspect of it. I sat down and thought, you know what, it's from fucking mid-70s. It's not going to be that bad, Paul. And it ain't. But there was only the only bit that was like, holy shit, is when the dude in the wheelchair, and they're going through the bushes. Like, oh, slow down, I hear something. And it's like...
Yeah.
That was the only bit.
But, yeah, so what did you actually think of it then? Because this is what I want to know.
I did like it. It was...
You liked it?
I did, but I didn't at the same time. Like, if you take out the... I'm not watching this in the 70s. I'm watching it in 2017.
Yeah.
And it's not scary at all. There's no gore. And I probably see it the second time you watched it full through, Alex. I'm at that stage where I probably need to watch it again.
But I definitely won't.
Do you know what
you,
I mean?
You definitely won't watch it again, but you need to.
Yeah. Something like
No, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I think it's certainly a movie that I appreciate.
I did like the independent style of it. Like, you could tell. I obviously looked up all the information on it afterwards, that he was a documentary thing. And it's at the start of it where they're she's talking to about reading from a magazine about evil, and the camera zooms in ever so slightly on her, and I'm thinking, that's a bit fucking weird. Why are you doing that? It was just an odd technique to use at that stage. But
no, I know what you mean. There's a lot of them, a lot of little bits in it that are like that. One thing that did strike me actually watching it again though was how seamlessly it sort of fits together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oftentimes when you watch these sort of low budget horror movies or whatever, they jar a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, the cuts don't sort of fully flow, and they might cross the line maybe, and things like that.
There's a lack of talent or understanding.
Yes. Whereas that's definitely not the case with this movie. There's definitely an understanding and a talent. I mean, and you know, like I said, whatever I think of this movie, I like Poltergeist, for example, and I like Life Force. I certainly like other Toby Hooper movies. So yeah, I was really interested to hear your opinion on it though, Paul. Cause
no, I like the independent film aspect of it. As a horror film, probably not, but no, I like that way.
Fair enough. I'm glad at that. That's a better outcome than I hoped for, to be honest, but brilliant. What did you think of it then, Warren? Obviously, as a person that has lots of interest in it.
I hate this movie. I have never enjoyed watching this film. The first time I watched it, I must have been about 16 or something. And I swear I had a magazine. I'm pretty sure it was a Kerrang magazine. Usually about metal music or stuff, but they did a top 100 goriest horror films. And this came in their number one spot. I think.
Wait, it was called top 100 goriest horror
films? Yeah. Ichi the Killer was second.
Shit, isn't it? Well, that makes sense, but
it said that, but Ichi the Killer isn't a horror film. It's just gory. True. So yeah, it's like the first two picks, they somehow fucked it up. So me and friends like get hold of the movies back before they cared about like sharing ID or anything. So I managed to buy it. And we're like, ready. He's like, this is the number one goriest film. Like, this always tops our lists and things. And got a bit bored. So where's the blood? What's going on? There's no massacre. You know, I've watched it a few times since, and I appreciate what it's done for horror, but I think it didn't get me early enough to be able to. I know I get really picky with things that are dated. Like, I do seem to have a cutoff point somewhere, and this is before that point, so. Like, this is too old, too dated. I've seen things done better before I saw this movie, so I don't get to have those nostalgia goggles and enjoy it for what it was. And then just like, I've seen better.
See, I think I'm quite good at, or I'd like to think that I'm quite good at imagining what it would have been like. So like with this movie, for example, I watch it and I sort of think like, okay, so it's a bit crazy and it's certainly got that very real look about it. So I can see why it had an impact, but I'm not entirely sure why. So like when I watch Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween, for example, I'm like, yeah, this is a really good movie. And I relate to the Laurie Strode character, relate to the Donald Pleasance character. I find the plot engaging. I don't really find it scary, but it's tense. I can see why as well at the same time that it was like such a big thing. Whereas this movie, I can see why it was a big thing, but all of those things seem to be purely aesthetic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I can see why people like it, and I certainly don't hate it. But I don't really get the love.
Yeah, like I don't get the don't know if it's the right thing, but like the everlasting love.
Yeah,
like I still know people who are like, "There's never been a better horror movie than Texas Chainsaw Massacre." So it's horror like, well, went
there has
downhill.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Just as a starting point,
I prefer Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Honestly, it's my favorite in the original series.
Well,
although Next Generation is something to behold.
But again,
that's McConaughey and Zellweger.
Oh yeah,
that baffling. Yeah, that's yeah.
You ain't never seen McConaughey like he McConaughey's in that movie.
All right.
But I realise you're sort of half joking there when you say that, but it's also true.
Yeah, it is. He like, has a robot leg that he controls with VCR remotes. He works for the government. Aliens show up.
Right, yeah, I just sort of think, like, I mean, like I said, I don't, like, and like you said, I don't get that sort of everlasting love. This is definitely a cult film. Like I said, it's definitely a fucking cult movie. It's got mad fucking cult following.
Yeah.
To the point where we're going to get hate. I'm pretty sure we will get hate. It might not be on our comment section, because no one ever fucking comments in our comment section. But
it might do now.
People will bitch about us. Like, yeah. That, do you know what I mean? That's what will happen.
I'll get a private message, like I did when I reviewed The Avengers, where I said, it was alright. I got a message from a friend that just went, "You're wrong."
Do you know what's funny is that would make a better movie than The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It wouldn't really. I'm just trying to insult you now. Chainsaw fans. But yeah, like, you know, it certainly is definitely a cult movie. It's got this mad cult following. It has the whole passion, independent production feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It did change the horror landscape in a way, I suppose. I mean, I'm not really convinced that it did it in the same sense as something like Psycho or Halloween, which, you know, sort of, or even like some of Cronenberg's earlier work, which like really changed the way that horror was made. I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre, inadvertently, to be fair, because there isn't an awful lot of gore, if any, but I think it sort of gave birth to torture porn, basically. Which is an entire genre that exists out of people that have misunderstood the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But yeah, like I don't sort of necessarily think that was particularly a thing that like that would have happened anyway. I know that's sort of like a stupid thing to say, but it's the logical next step of horror. Do you know what I mean? Like, it didn't totally reinvent the genre, take something existing and turn it on its head. It just took it to the logical next step.
Yeah, so instead of, like, opening a door for people, it happened to be the first one to sneak into the door that no one noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, or maybe it just jumped off of a 10-foot ladder.
And twisted its ankle. Friday the 13th came along and was like, "Hold my beer, boys, I got this." Which is actually...
But I mean, you know, I have to appreciate just the fucking sheer will power that went into making this movie. Like, I can't deny that's fucking awesome. As an independent filmmaker myself.
Yeah.
Like, well fucking done. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had a go at Toby Hooper and his rich friends. But but yeah, that's fucking impressive. It just is. To make this movie and to make it, like I said, although I don't particularly like it, to make it as good as it is and to have had the impact that it has with barely any money, doing the fucking stupid shit that they were doing and expecting it to come out as a PG. Like, well done. That's impressive. And that is impressive.
And for it to become one of the best horror films of all time as well.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, I have to sort of admire that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think I got to admire that, you know, they got it done and the hardships they went through and what it's done, you know, for the genre, whether deliberately or inadvertently.
I mean, I do sort of get the impression that it is just, you know, there's not really a plot and anything like that in this movie, so it is just like fucking crazy. But yeah, I mean, it is just impressive. So I mean, my for what it's worth, my vote is that yes, it's a cult movie. Does it deserve to be one? Probably it does deserve to be one, just not as much of a one as it is. If that makes sense.
I'd agree with that. It's been around for so long. People have just gone, It's a great film. It's a great film.
You don't understand. Like Citizen Kane, it's the best movie ever made.
Yeah, we're going to constantly put it at number one because it is great. Because we've always said it's great, but it's actually shit. No, it's great.
It is a bit like that, though. I think.
Yeah.
I didn't like, you know, like I said, this isn't a movie that should be forgotten because it certainly did do a lot. But and just the, like I said, the impressiveness of the fact that they got it made means that it probably shouldn't be forgotten, just for the amazing behind the scenes stories, basically. But it shouldn't be. It is up there with like the all time famous. It's so cult, it's mainstream, and I know that's an absurd thing to say, but
yeah.
But that's what it is, and it shouldn't be. Do you know what I mean? Like, it should be cult, and it should be proper cult.
I was thinking more like it was cult, and now it more should be a museum exhibit. like
one that you don't have a film.
And like, look, this is the original like movie. It's not really worth watching now unless you're not studying it, but appreciate what it did.
Next is the Woody Allen exhibit.
Yeah, well, next it's like, these are the Spitfires.
I gotta leave you alone.
This is the Woody Allen exhibit. This is his newest film that's been put on exhibit here because it's not worth watching, but we should appreciate what he's done. And he's...
What I want to know is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre exhibit family friendly?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, children have to be accompanied by a parent.
Well, they definitely have to be accompanied by a parent in the Woody Allen exhibit.
Yeah, just not Woody Allen.
Yeah, adult themes.
But are they allowed unaccompanied in the Texas Chainsaw one? Or is it definitely parental guidance?
It's definitely parental guidance. Finally got his PG.
Fucking hell. That's just ridiculous, the PG thing.
And the fact that story, it go.
That story alone is why it deserves to be a cult movie. Just not one as much of a cult following as it does have. I feel like Wild Things deserves a bigger cult following. Do you know what I mean? Like, and again, I don't. It's not because I dislike the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I don't want to go that far. I don't hate it like you do, Warren. But
there's just so many better ones to choose from. Halloween.
Yeah, there is, isn't there? Yeah, Halloween. Fucking Halloween. Let's just watch Halloween.
Although I do think it's better than Friday the 13th Part 3. Nah, it might be Part 4.
Really?
Nah, I need to be.
I think even the bad Friday the 13th movies, I would enjoy more, just because of the campy value.
Yeah, And they got more violence, more...
They're just more entertaining because they're more absurd.
And Jason's there.
And Jason, yeah. So, anyway, there you have it. That is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Agreed that it should be a cult movie. Definitely should be a cult movie. Definitely is a cult movie, but probably shouldn't have as large of a cult following as it actually does. Now, before we tell you all where you can find us, please don't kill us. This is a PG show.
Fuck it isn't.
Well, it's as PG as Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Warren, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Warren_Badinsky. I also have my own podcast with Keith Huckfield, that's Stab in the Dark Films podcast. Give that a listen to and put some comments on and convince Keith to do some more episodes. Actually, to be fair to him, it is because we struggle to meet up and work out what we're talking about at the moment.
it's because your podcast is like interesting. But what I mean is like because it's actually discussing like two movies or a selection of movies or whatever. It doesn't tend to be just one movie, does it?
No, yeah, it's usually like a remake versus the original. So we're trying to pick the new one of that. I think we're aiming for The Grudge.
Oh, that's a good one.
If we can, because I just found I have copies of that.
Fair enough. And Paul, where can people find you?
Chopping up bodies.
I didn't know they did that at Poundland.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
How else do they get the spam?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, very good.
We sell bacon.
Very
too.
Good. Well, and I'm Alex Secker. You can find me on Facebook @SeckerA or on Twitter @AlexSecker. You can also follow the official Cultish Movies podcast page on Facebook /Cultish Movies and on Twitter @Cultish Movies. Yeah. Next week it's Masters of the Universe.
I know some stories about that one too.
So if you want to hear, I think Master of the Universe, right, is going to be really interesting because, and I don't mean this in a sense that I'm trying to give away my opinion, I'm being very careful about the way that I word this, it's our first bad movie. Does that make sense?
So we just agreed this was a bad movie.
Well, no, but like...
And we've aired Danny Ford, right?
Do you know what I mean, though? Do you know what I mean, though, right?
Well, the reputation is bad. Like...
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck you, man. I like Annie Hall. Yeah, well, fuck off. That's it. Now, I'm not even going to read a thing at the end of this podcast. Normally, I do final fucking quotes, the last quote of the movie, but this movie doesn't even have one of those.
Fine, I have a final thought for you.
Go on, Em.
According to IMDb, the film's runtime is 83 minutes. The new longer version is 75 minutes.
It's just the movie that keeps on giving.
Yeah. And then there's an unrated version at 88 minutes.
Of course, why not? Yeah. And that the unrated version at 88 minutes is somehow also a PG. Thank you for tuning in. Please don't forget to check out our back catalogue. You can find us on SoundCloud and on iTunes. Like I said, Master Universe next week. Thanks to the panel for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you both for watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We watch it so you don't have to. And I guess all that's left to say is...